Hi, I'm Mike Papantonio, and this is America's Lawyer. The death of a loved one is one of the most difficult experiences a person can face. And as people are grieving, corporations are standing on the sidelines just waiting to turn tragedy into a huge payday. Recently, reports began surfacing that showed companies were actually selling off bodies that have been donated for scientific research, literally piece by piece, without ever telling the families. Tonight, we'll tell you about this body trade and what you need to know to protect your loved ones from being sold to the highest bidder. And later in the show, I'll talk to you about a corruption probe that has expanded to include 60 U.S. Navy officers. The allegations say they accepted lavish payouts and with prostitutes in exchange for military information. So don't go anywhere. America's Lawyer starts right now. People have been donating their bodies to science after they die, hoping that their contribution can help researchers better understand the aging process, disease progression, and help train the next generation of medical professionals. Donating their body for many people is the last selfless act they get to perform on this earth. It should come as no surprise then that corporations have found a way to turn this selfless act by their fellow citizens into a huge profit center. Over the years, countless companies have popped up that specialize in providing cadavers to scientific organizations for their research. But not all of these companies are in business to help scientific research. In fact, a lot of them are there to make a quick buck in the most disgusting and ethical ways possible. For nearly 10 years, a company called Science Care Incorporated has been accepting bodies that were donated by families in the name of science. The company told families that the bodies would be studied, they'd be used for academic purposes, and then cremated remains would be returned to the families at no cost. This provided a great opportunity for low-income families who are too strapped for cash to provide elaborate funeral arrangements for their loved ones, and they also got the benefit of knowing that they were helping scientific research. Unfortunately, these families that in that scenario didn't play out like they had hoped. In 2008, the company decided they weren't making enough money by being simply in between for the families and the research facilities, so they developed a new business model that they claim was based off of the business model of McDonald's. Really, these are their words. McDonald's has a model that says no matter where you go, whether it's a McDonald's in New York or San Francisco, your Big Mac is going to taste exactly the same. Except ScienceCare wasn't selling hamburgers to customers, they were selling body parts. A year-long investigation by Reuters revealed that after the donated bodies were returned to ScienceCare, the staff would then dismember the bodies to sell to academics and research for further study, part by part. Rather than taking the body and cremating it and returning it to the family as promised, the company decided to take the remains, chop them up, and sell them out without the family's knowledge or permission. The cremated remains were then returned to the family. They were just leftovers that couldn't be sold off for a profit. The most shocking part of this story is that this is all 100% legal in the United States. While there are very strict regulations about donating and handling organs that are donated to be used, the donations of whole bodies is surprisingly unsupervised. The families whose loved ones were dismembered and sold off to organizations have now filed a lawsuit against ScienceCare as a result of the company's disgusting, ghoulish practice. About this story is attorney Peter Mouget. Peter, tell us what the Reuters investigation has shown so far.
There were a few things that were really disturbing. I mean, number one, this area is totally unregulated. So for sale of body parts, it pretty much doesn't matter. As long as you say you're using it for research, you can ship those body parts. It was extremely troublesome when you're hearing stories about body parts decomposing and shipped in brown paper or brown cardboard boxes, bodies laying out side and being thawed off with garden hoses, body parts being cut off with chainsaws, all for a tremendous profit and totally unregulated. Scary.
Well, the families, of course, didn't anticipate that that was going to be the case. I mean, there's no question that wasn't something that they counted on when they said, hey, we're going to donate this body. It didn't mean part by part, arm by arm, foot by foot, leg by leg. So, look, how much money were these companies pulling in with this scheme? I guess you know, if they break it into parts, they were making more money. They calculated that, and they said rather than donating the whole body, let's do it part by part, and we're gonna clear more money. Isn't that kind of what happened here?
Exactly. A couple of these companies took everything to scale, meaning they went out and marketed their services to hospice, funeral homes, and say, you know, somebody was ill and expected to die within a few months. They actively solicited those folks to donate their body, all in exchange for free cremation. And so the body supply got to be higher and higher. And as they scaled up the pieces, some of these companies were making well into the eight figures a year. The highest reports that I saw, $25, $26, $27 million a year for selling body parts. I mean, big money.
But they had to break it into parts. Here's the point here. We start from the beginning. The family says, here, I'm donating this body to science. They're thinking that this is a cadaver. It's going to be used in a university. They're going to use it for scientific research in that way. But they couldn't make enough money that way, but they could make enough money if they cut off a foot, a hand, a leg, a head, and sold it like that. They put a calculator to it and said, we can make a lot more money. What's the difference between donating organs and donating a human body? How are the two treated differently in terms of regulations?
First of all, they're very, very heavily regulated, the organ piece of this. So the organs are harvested, they're flown, everything's surgical. It's an oversight board oversees the organs as they go from the person that's deceased into the recipient. On the other hand, you have the body part donation, which to me the scariest part and the saddest part about this is the folks that are targeted are the poorest of the poor, the people that can't essentially afford to die. They don't have money, the $700 to pay for the cremation. They really don't have a choice. So when the loved one passes away, they don't have the $700 for cremation, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 to be buried. This is the only choice they have to donate their body to quote-unquote science, and then this parade of horribles comes out as a result of the investigation.
Now, this is the weird of all weird, but ScienceCare, for example, says that they based their business model off of McDonald's.
Right.
Can you tell us exactly what that means? What's your take on that statement? We base our business model off of McDonald's. What's your take?
If that doesn't demonstrate the kind of flawed concept of morality, I'm not really sure what does. But what their thought was is if I get a Big Mac in Los Angeles, or I get a Big Mac in New Orleans, or I get a Big Mac in Cleveland, it's all the same. They take that analogy and say, if I'm going to order a head or a torso or an arm or a leg, that it's the exact same cut that's going to be delivered to your research facility or your office or whoever you are. So you get the same cut, just like McDonald's delivers the same McDonald's, which demonstrates they think this is a commodity. They think that the essence of a human being, the body, to take that piece and just deliver it the same way you delivered a Big Mac, that's their comparison.
Well, I talked to Mike Berg in Denver, Colorado, who's handling cases against these companies. And he said, this is the way he describes it. He says, if you donate a body to science, you have a reasonable expectation on how it's going to be used. There's this notion. Now, it may not be in the fine print, but you have a general sense of how it's going to be used. Should families have a right to know, I mean, under the law, should they have a right to know how that body is used?
Absolutely. I mean, when you say donating a body to science, what I would envision as a cadaver in a laboratory setting with medical students or nurses or some kind of student in a very tight surgical setting, and when they're done using that body, the cadaver, that it's then cremated and given back to the family. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is literally heads are being taken off with rough instruments like chainsaws and stored on shelves in freezers, along with feet and legs, and the bodies are all broken up and dispersed to multiple parts. It's turned into a commodity business. So the reasonable expectation is a medical setting exudes lab coats, masks, oversight, students, professors, and in reality, you've got body parts being shipped in cardboard boxes all over the country, and that's not what's disclosed in the paperwork, and why I think that Mike Burke's cases have some merit to them, that definitely people have a right to know. But at the end of the day, do we really want to disclose our way out of this? Isn't this really just a morality that we need to draw the line, that we're not going to take advantage of the poorest of the poor, because anybody with money is never going to agree to this? Is it really okay to take the poorest of the poor and chop them up and sell them?
Yeah, the visual, of course, is granddad, mom, you know, you have a sense of, okay, I can't afford to bury them. So I'm going to do something that's noble. I'm going to, you know, they say that they want to give their body to science. We agree, and we're going to help with that. We want to encourage that. And but then you hear the back end of the story is anything but what that expectation was when they're sawing off legs with buzz saws and selling them body parts, you know, all over the country. That's not what the expectation was, and that's where the lawsuit in Denver really is surrounding, because he's interviewed some of these clients, and their reaction is it's the same thing that you would have as we're talking about this. What a bizarre business. Is there any indication that regulators are going to step up and make any changes to how these bodies are handled, or do you think they'll just continue to ignore the problem, Peter? What is your take on that?
Not yet. I mean, like any field that we talk about and we look at, usually it's the trial bar, the trial lawyers out leading the charge, like Michael Burg, that's out there trying to set the standards higher than they are, and the regulators will come in years after the problem's been exposed and try to clean it up a little bit. So when the pressure gets bad enough, I think you'll start to see it. But the truth is, and what's scary about this is, because this is impacting some of the lower socioeconomic groups, I think the regulators and the government will be even slower to respond than if it was impacting people higher up the socioeconomic chain.
Yeah, it's kind of more of the same, isn't it? We think that, I feel okay about letting grandma's body be used for this, because I believe that this is how it's going to be done, and certainly regulators would be there to protect me if it's not being done like that. But again, we have no regulatory oversight system in America that really works like that, because most of the time, the regulator industry is owned by the industry, and that's what happened here. Peter, thank you for joining me on this. I'd like to follow up on this in a couple of months and see where it is, okay?
Sounds good.
Coming up, the corruption probe that centered around the arrest of a Singapore businessman has expanded to include many high-ranking officials in the U.S. Navy. That's next. Navy admirals are now part of a massive investigation looking into the bribery and corruption charges that center around the now-jailed former Malaysian contractor known as Fat Leonard. The allegations include payouts and cigars, watches, and rotating carousels of prostitutes in exchange for military information. Join me now to talk about that is correspondent Brigida Santos. Brigida, oddly enough, not a lot of coverage on this story from corporate media. What are the details of the allegations on these officers, and how many military personnel are under investigation, and does it involve contractors? It always usually goes back to weapons contractors, government contractors. Where does this one go?
So 440 active and retired sailors are now under investigation for ethics violations, including those 60 admirals that you mentioned. Keep in mind, there are only 220 admirals in the entire Navy, so this is very widespread. 34 people are facing criminal charges, 19 of whom have already pleaded guilty in federal court, and this is by far the worst corruption case in U.S. Navy history, Mike.
Yeah, Fat Leonard, I mean, that's this guy's name. Fat Leonard Francis is now in jail for bribing these officers. Who is Fat Leonard? I mean, he sounds like some kind of character out of a cheesy novel. And how did he end up doing business with the U.S. Navy in the first place? I asked that question. I kind of know the answer, because we understand how corporate contractors, how government contractors, weapons contractors, military contractors, I've seen how they work. It's a pretty ugly picture, but tell us about this Fat Leonard, if you would.
So Leonard Glenn Francis is a 350-pound defense contractor from Singapore. He's said to be very charming and likable. In fact, so much so that he bribed Navy officials and employees with all of those lavish gifts and prostitutes and things like that in exchange for classified information about the movement of warships and submarines, information about contracts that his competitors had, and even information about ongoing law enforcement inquiries into his company, Glenn Defense Marine Asia. Now, he then used all of that information to get U.S. Navy ships to dock at ports that his company controlled. So that he could then overcharge the Navy $35 million in services for things like removing sewage, barges, food supply, things like that. And he did this for over a decade. In fact, he built up such a good relationship with the Navy that his company was the one most depended on by the Navy to resupply and refuel its vessels in the Seventh Fleet. And of course, the Seventh Fleet is the largest Navy fleet in Asia, and it's responsible for patrolling the Indian and Pacific Oceans, Mike. So this is incredibly outrageous and shocking.
A book was just published that I wrote. It's called Law and Vengeance. It's a legal thriller, and it's actually about this very topic of government contractors. And I mean, this is just what we're talking about in this story is just the edge of how corrupt the system really is. I mean, when people start understanding how many billions of dollars every single year that we waste in these government contracts kinds of scenarios where nobody talks about it. Media doesn't talk about it. Government sure doesn't talk about it. And it's billions of dollars with people, not exclusively with all the fat Leonards in the world, but there's a lot of it. How long do you think this went on with Fat Leonard and the Seventh Fleet? What do you think?
So this went on, as I said, for over a decade, and federal agents actually nabbed him in 2013. They lured him to San Diego under the pretense that he would be meeting with some admirals who were going to offer him these lucrative, shady contracts. He took the bait, of course, and was arrested. So this has been going on for a really long time, Mike.
You know, it's puzzling to think how one man, Brigida, can end up having so much ownership over the loyalty of a branch of the U.S. military. Is there anything out there that explains how so many caved into this sex and booze trade? I mean, we get it. Money goes a long way in any kind of setting, whether it's an admiral, whether it's some contractor that believes they can pay their way into any opportunity to steal from taxpayers. But what is your take on this?
I mean, it was really just super easy for him. It sounds like he just bribed people, offered them things. He was very charming. People said that he was really good at getting close to them, exploiting their weaknesses. He would find out if people had marital problems or financial problems and then exploit those problems to get them to agree to go down this dark rabbit hole with him. And one Navy official said he was so good at it that even the KGB couldn't have done this. But, I mean, he was really offering people, in one case, things like escorts dressed up like Santa's helpers just to get a $660,000 sewage bill slapped onto the Navy. It really wasn't that hard. It simply comes down to money here.
Well, you know, my bet is that this probably originated with a whistleblower. Now, the problem is our firm, for example, we handle whistleblowers in these types of cases. And when you see how the whistleblower is handled, the person who's trying to say to the public, trying to say to the government, look, we're being ripped off for billions of dollars because of these crooked kind of arrangements on bidding or whatever, fixed bids, whatever it is. And people have no idea about how much taxpayers lose on this because nobody talks about it. But this type of scenario with Fat Leonard, I can promise you, happens every single day, and there's nobody that's there to account for how many billions of dollars taxpayers lose because of these scams. The Navy is funded with U.S. tax dollars, of course. How much money did these officers and Fat Leonard scam from the American public where the Department of Justice, I guess there is some plan to get it back. How much money are we talking about, do you think, here?
So this was $35 million. The judge has ordered all of the defendants to repay that amount in restitution. But at the same time, the judge has acknowledged that those people are not going to be able to pay back that money because they simply don't have the means. In addition to this scandal, there are several other problems in the Navy. In fact, four major accidents happened in Asian waters this year where the Seventh Fleet operates. And just this week, two Navy SEALs are now under investigation for allegedly murdering a U.S. Army Green Beret who had discovered that they were reportedly stealing cash that was meant for informants, Mike. So this is an entire branch of our military, it sounds like. And if it's happening there, it might be happening elsewhere.
Yeah, of course, there's the $12 billion that disappeared in Iraq that the government still has no explanation on where it went. Yet the story goes on. Brigida, thank you for covering this. We're going to cover a lot more of these whistleblower kind of cases. Hospitals in Washington state are accused of withholding charity care from low-income patients. Former employees at some of these hospitals say they were trained to always collect money before offering a charity care application. And for that, a lawsuit's been filed against the hospitals. Joining me to talk about that is legal journalist for Trial Lawyer magazine, Molly Barrows.
Well, boys and girls, there is some information that you won't get on right-wing or Republican-type radio or TV or any place else. Well, you'll get it someplace else. Anyhow, think about it.